Hey, Western Wisconsin, let's see what we're up to. It's Thursday. It's 10:06, actually closer to 10:07 now. That means Spectrum West is again opening the doors to the arts, music, and culture of West Wisconsin, allowing Jim Oliver and I to hang out with and introduce you to the people who make it all happen. I'm Al Ross. It's such an interesting and enjoyable program to be a part of, if for no other reason, the diversity we encounter and present. For instance, today, a regionally produced winemaker getting a lot of attention and awards to match. A theater company rehearses for the beginning of its 34th season. Dogs are swimming in a city pool to raise money for a worthy cause. A film festival that celebrates LGBTQ lifestyles and invites discussion. And oh, the things you can make in a waffle iron. How's that for diversity? We scour Western Wisconsin and all the communiques we receive and then schedule people who represent who we are, what we enjoy, how we indulge ourselves, and what we value in entertainment and enrichment. So if you're home or at the office, settle in with a beverage of some kind. Spectrum West goes very well with many available. If you're driving, this should help you resist all textations. All in all, welcome and hope you enjoy the little party we're going to have today. And what do you say we start with wine? Always a nice aperitif. Last week, we brought you the story of Riverbend Winery and their recognition for producing notable wines. There's another decorated vineyard and group of vintners in our western Wisconsin midst in Alma, Danziger Vineyard. A namesake of the vineyard is David Danziger, who along with brother Melvin started the operation for something to do during retirement. And they're just entering the grape harvest season as we speak. Good year for growing grapes this year?
The season has been okay, but the winter was a little bit hard on some of the grapes. We're expecting about 80% of a normal crop. Many places are only have half or less.
Yeah, I was going to ask about winter and wonder if where you're located, the ridges and the rolling coulees, if that kind of protects you from the worst stuff.
The best place for the grapes is on top of the ridges. Huh. The problem back in a coulee is that cold air settles in there, and it actually gets a little bit colder, and they get problems in the spring with these spring frosts around Mother's Day. And at that point in time, there's a small fruit bud already developing. No. And if it gets down to 26 degrees for an hour, there's no grapes.
Well, let's refresh people's memories about the history of Danziger Vineyards.
10 years ago, we actually planted grapes, a larger number of grapes over the first 3 years, started training vines. And it takes the third year before you get any grapes. You start getting a few grapes. My five-year-olds are considered a mature vine. And at that point, we built a winery and started selling wine. This is our fifth season of selling wine.
Weren't you involved in other kinds of farming?
Yes, my brother Melvin and I started this as a retirement project. I had two sons that took over our 500-cow dairy, which they still run. You know, a lot of people have a midlife crisis to buy a Corvette, you know. I built it, got a vineyard and a winery.
What's the last 10 years been like? Has it been better than your wildest dreams? Has it been harder, easier, more fun? What?
The grapes, we've been pleasantly surprised how well they grow on the ridges here for us. We think this is an ideal spot for the grapes, so we're really happy growing the grapes. When we started the winery, of course, there's a lot of things to learn. We went out and hired a winemaker. He helped us pick out our equipment for the winery and, of course, make our wine. In Wisconsin, we're fairly good size. In the nation, we're a little winery.
Yeah.
We're about 40,000 bottles.
There's lots more famous places where grapes are grown and wine is made, but you don't have earthquakes.
That's correct. No earthquakes. But we are developing a whole new wine industry here because of these grapes. The University of Minnesota was very instrumental. Developing cold climate grapes can take the cold. That's really fueling the growth of these vineyards and wineries that you're seeing around.
Yeah, I had a chat with Donna at Riverbend. She was talking about the one guy who's given credit for the first hybrid grape.
Elmer Swenson was his name, from Osceola, Wisconsin, retired dairy farmer.
Oh, wow.
He started growing these as a hobby, and he figured out that if you take the wild grapes that grow in the woods around here, there's two species that grow in the woods, wild grapes, and you cross them with the French or German varieties, you can get the cold hardiness in the grape.
Back in history again for just a second, you mentioned 10 years ago, you mentioned it took 3 years to get your first grapes. Do you remember that first bottle of wine?
Yeah, wasn't the best. That's why I had to go out and hire a winemaker.
Ah, so you tried it on your own first.
Well, we tried to make a little bit. You know, we get a few grapes off those first ones, and then we started selling grapes elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother and I really didn't have a lot of experience in making wine. We'd made a little bit of homemade wine. But these grapes are very different to work with. They're much higher in acid, and they have much more fruit flavors. Different than taking a California grape and making wine.
So you had a first not-so-good bottle of wine, and then you had later on, did it take another year to get a good bottle of wine or what?
Those wines after they aged a little were not too bad, but we had a Christmas celebration. We brought out some of this wine, and it was probably a little young. And my wife says in front of everybody, "You are hiring a winemaker, aren't you?" The other thing is we're large enough that we need the extra help anyway. We have our vineyard is 18 acres. That takes almost four people to keep that up in the summer. You know, and then we need people in our tasting room, and then we have the winery. The winery is a little bit more seasonal. The vineyard's seasonal, too. We don't do too much in the winter out there.
Those 18 acres that he was talking about are in Alma, Wisconsin. It's called Danziger Vineyards, and David Danziger is on the phone with us, and we contacted him because they won just a truckload of awards. And Dave, awards are nice, but wine, you know, is to people's palates what scents are to a dog's nose. There's just a lot of them out there, and everybody has their own favorites, so I'm curious, do you formulate wines to win recognition, or is that simply a nice byproduct of what you do, a nice surprise?
We think it's a byproduct, and it's also a confirmation that we're doing things right with these grapes, particularly the last awards we won at the 6th Annual International Cold Climate Competition was held at Minnesota, and the University of Minnesota is involved in that, and the grape growers in Minnesota are. And that's limited to these cold climate grapes. When we win at that, we know we're using, we figure our grapes right. There were 284 wines at this last competition with 59 wineries from 11 states.
Yeah.
We won the white division with the best white with our Golden Sunrise, which made it off the Frontenac Gris grape. I describe it as a citrusy Pinot Grigio, but it's a nice citrusy wine, summer wine. Whites traditionally are more summery, reds are more winter. We also were fortunate that we do fruit wines, which we buy the fruit. And at Wisconsin this year's State Fair, we won the fruit division with our wine made off locally grown currants that are grown by Ann Davis out of Comedy, Wisconsin. In Minnesota, we won 7 medals on 6 different grape varieties.
Yeah, yeah.
We had 2 double golds, a gold, 3 silvers, and a bronze at Minnesota.
Yeah. So do you actually get a medal? Do you get a ribbon? What do you get?
Oh, we physically get a medal. If you come into our tasting room, you'll see on one wall we have all our medals. We have right now we have 27 wines that have won medals out of our 29 we have.
Congratulations on that. You must be curious about how other people's wines are. Do you take a road trip every once in a while and check them out?
I have a bad habit in the winter. I go to Florida for a few weeks. Sometimes it takes the long route upstate New York. We go through the Finger Lakes, swing down to Virginia and do the Shenandoah Valley. Beautiful wineries in there. A lot of little wineries up in the mountains there. Northern Georgia, believe it or not, has a half dozen wineries and a wine trail up in the mountains. Of course, some of those are quite different because the grapes are different. We like upstate New York because they are using some of these cold climate grapes. Of course, we've been around. I've probably been in half of the wineries in Wisconsin, and currently there's 70 wineries with tasting rooms.
Cool.
There's some ground to cover in Wisconsin. Instead, they can go on the website, Wisconsin Winery Association, and they can find where these wineries are.
Some of those awards that you won at the Minnesota Fair included wines like River Paradise, Late Harvest, St. Pepin, Wamondi White, Sweet Alma Red, Rose Valley Rosé, Danziger White. How about naming wines? How do you do that? Throw darts at a board of words?
Oh, no, no, no. We have to get a bottle of that wine. We have to drink a bottle of it so we're in the right mood.
Sure, sure, sure.
And that brings creativity to us at that point in time. We do like to use local names, as you notice. You know, some people will name them just after a variety of grapes. We'll do that occasionally. We have a couple dry wines, our dry St. Croix, our Marquette, that's what they're called, Marquette St. Croix. Some of those grapes will make multiple wines out of them. So we want to put a name on there that's kind of descriptive, you know, like River Paradise. It's a sweet white wine, you know. Wamondi White is a nice off-dry Riesling-style wine off the La Crescent grape. It's very nice. You know, we just pick a name that kind of seems to suit the wine a little bit.
You mentioned the Wisconsin Association. Do you hang out with other winemakers? Is that a good idea?
It's a bad habit once you get into drinking this wine. You know, keep doing a lot of it. The Wisconsin Winery Association has annual meeting, a couple-day meeting down, and we also have a grape growers meeting at this time at the Wisconsin Dells in the winter. And there's a little bit of wine consumed in the evenings, and comparisons done, and discussions. It's a place to go if someone who's thinking about getting in the grape or the wine business, taking some of these classes, these seminars that we hold at there, and you can learn some of the basics and what's going on in the industry.
Well, Dave Danziger, three cheers and a toast for all the recognition. Way to go. Danziger Vineyards has done well.
Thank you. And this Saturday, we have a grape stomp. We got a big tub out here, and people get in and stomp grapes. You do that every year, start of the harvest.
And then you play that episode of I Love Lucy when she was doing this.
If you come dressed as Lucille Ball, you get to stomp for free. If you don't, we charge you $10, but you do get a T-shirt. That juice is captured, and we make our toe jam wine.
Oh, wow.
The only place you can get it.
Can men dress like Lucy, too?
We had one gentleman in drag last year.
Ah, that's good to know. I don't know why, but it is good to know.
Just if you wanted to, Al, you know, you're welcome.
Yeah, okay. Well, good. She had a kind of a bandana thing on, a scarf,
yep,
didn't she?
Bandana and a blue blouse and a skirt. You know, we really want that red hair.
And wash your feet before you go.
It all adds flavor to that wine.
Well, that's, yeah. Dave, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Al.
David Danziger, one of several award-winning wineries and vineyards right down the road in western Wisconsin. The website is danzingervineyard.com. Got a memo here in front of me. The Wisconsin Working Stock Dog Association is bringing its 29th annual Labor Day stock dog trial to Hudson. Tomorrow, Friday through Monday, the sheep herding competition features some of the country's best stock dogs and dog handlers. The event is open to the public at the Badlands Snow Park site. That's on Kinney Road in Hudson. 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday through Sunday, and then Monday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's pretty cool. WWSDA.org is the website there. Well, Monday, Labor Day, is unofficially the last day of summer, and it's the last day for swimming at Fairfax Pool in Eau Claire. And as it's been for the last few years, the swimming is reserved for man's best friend. Pat Williams called the other day, and she has the details.
It will be an event from noon to 3, and dogs are $2 each for entrance, and people are free. This will be our 10th year.
Okay. But this year there's a little something different.
Right. The proceeds from this year's swim will be going to the Military Working Dog Tribute at the High Ground at Neillsville. And besides the admission, we have silent auction and we have raffle. And then there's a lure coursing space set up for the dogs. It's kind of a fun 3 hours.
Now, the piece that I'm looking at here in front of me talks about volunteers and donors and things like that. Are you good with that? I mean, it's just a couple of days away.
We can always use more volunteers, and the donors are still coming in, so
okay.
We're doing pretty good.
Silent auctions, raffles, big pool, dogs get to swim. If someone wants to volunteer, how can they volunteer to volunteer?
They can probably give me a call at 715-839-0752.
All right. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you, Al.
Again, the phone number for more info or to volunteer, donate, or et cetera is 715-839-0752.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Chippewa Valley Museum. The Heritage Celebration Furniers for a Night recalls Eau Claire's 60s dance hall with dinner and dancing to the Thundermen at Florian Gardens September 11th. Details at cvmuseum.com.
Don't forget, Sunday is the 12th Alma Music and Arts Festival at the Alma Beach and Marina. Admission is free. Live music, food, art, and lots to do for young and old. It's 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. You take Harbor Road off Scenic Highway 35. That's just north of Alma. Should be fun. We'll be there. Well, the student-driven O'Queer Film Festival was begun as a forum within which to approach, discuss, and portray the realities that surround the LGBTQ community, its allies, and those wishing to absorb and understand the challenges of our diverse culture. The festival runs September 24th through 28th in the Woodland Theater in the Davies Center and offers audiences a wide range of cinema, feature-length to short films, comedies to dramas to documentaries. It's all open to the public, and to provide some of the vision behind this year's event, its director, Jerrica Christensen, soon to graduate with a degree in social justice, paid us a visit just the other day. Well, this is the fifth year of the festival. Faculty are the only ones who stick with the festival over the years because there's turnover, obviously, when it comes to students.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that keeps it fresh. So tell me about your involvement and how the festival continues to persevere, because I read there's only a handful of university film festivals of this type in the U.S. When and how did you get involved?
It started last year, the fourth year of the festival. And this festival is actually something that goes hand in hand with a summer course called the LGBTQ San Francisco Travel Seminar that I was a part of last year.
Oh, you went?
Yes, I went. So I was there.
Because I had the guys on who did the film about being in San Francisco.
Yeah, you had J.R. Smathers with
me. I sure did.
Yep.
Did you hear that?
I was actually in San Francisco with him this year when he went.
Did you hear the interview that he and I did?
No, I haven't heard it.
Oh, well.
I'm sure it's fantastic.
Okay, you just dropped a notch.
But, but I helped set it up as my...
Okay.
I shouldn't give myself all that praise.
Okay. Okay, so back to the San Francisco thing. This
yeah.
is part of a summer course.
Yes,
said.
It's part of a summer course. And in San Francisco, we attend the Frameline LGBT International Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And part of a... The students attend this film festival to watch films, to bring see which ones they want to bring back to Oh Queer.
Okay.
So you don't only have the class component, you have the film festival component in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Ah.
So you have the option of being a part of the Eau Queer staff or not when you're a student. So I chose to be part of the Eau Queer staff.
Okay.
And originally I was the trafficking director, which is the person who makes sure we receive all the films and I view all the films to make sure they don't have glitches and then mm-hmm. send them back. But my job also this year... stepped up to director of this year's film festival.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, this year we have return staff members. Ryan Spate is also a return staff member, and JR, who you had on here earlier.
I did. But you didn't hear.
Not yet. I'm going to listen to it right away.
That's positive. Not yet is good.
Yeah. So this year I get to be the director of it, and we've been working on it since, May, I think.
So one of my questions is, what's the process of putting this on? And as director, boy, you have a good perspective on that. Tell me what's involved in putting this all on.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Obviously, you had 4 years before you to get, because this is the fifth year of the festival.
Oh,
it's
yes.
It's been on before, so there is some groundwork and some foundation laid already.
Exactly. We don't restart it every year, but a lot of it, because there is new staff, it feels like it is restarted every year and you're starting from scratch. But the process, well, we got permission for funding of the festival way late this year. We almost thought we weren't going to have it.
Yeah, because the configuration changed a little bit, didn't it? I mean, there isn't an educational component to it this
year?
Yeah,
I'm not sure of the specifics of how the funding goes, but it had to do with some funding that got dropped. So then it wasn't until the beginning of May, I believe, or end of April, that we found out that we got a grant from the Blue Gold Differential Tuition.
Were you director at that time in April and May? And so you were sitting there kind of biting your nails saying, are we going to do this or not?
Yeah, it was basically like, am I going to be the director? Is there going to be a festival to be the director of? And when I found out, we were very, very excited that we got to do this. So the first step was, once we found out we got it, was booking flights basically to Los Angeles to attend the OutFest LGBTQ Film Festival out there. In California.
Is that a prerequisite? You have to be there?
It definitely is probably the best way to go view films.
Mm.
Go to a festival, watch the movie in front of a live audience to see how the audience reacts to it, as well as watching it yourself to see if you feel like this movie would be a good fit for bringing it back to our Chippewa Valley.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like a convention where you go to look at stuff.
And it's a standard thing that programmers and directors do of film festivals.
Okay.
That's how they generally do it.
It's all getting clearer to me now.
Yeah,
I'm glad I asked this question. Yeah.
Light bulbs going off.
Uh-huh.
Then once we came back, it took a week to decide what movies we were going to bring. Then we contacted all of the directors and film distributors, asking them if we could get their film. And then while at the same time as programming these films, we're also contacting people, getting ready for publicity to get as many people to know about our festival as possible. And publicity is the thing we're working on the most.
Hmm.
What else is involved? Watching all
this. How long were you in Los Angeles?
12 days. The festival was 10 days, I think. Maybe
oh,
it was
boy.
11. Yeah, a week and a half.
That's expensive.
Yeah, we...
unless you stayed in a tent in a park somewhere.
We were very... Well, that's part of what the grant helps pay
for.
Good. Okay. And we were very fortunate as well. One of the man that we rented the condo from that we stayed in, we all four, Ryan Spate, Ellen Mahaffey, and Pam Foreman and I all lived in the condo together for a week and a half.
That's
and
cool.
The man that we rented it from actually donated our Outfest passes to us.
Well, there you go.
So the Outfest, which was the festival we attended.
So there are friendly people in Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good.
He was amazing. He was a great host. So we got VIP passes. We got to have this amazing experience, feel like we were one of the directors, you know, of a film. You know, we got to stand right next to them and talk to them. So we got to do a lot of great networking.
Sitting in the studio with us is Jerrica Christensen. She's the director of the O Queer Festival. It's a film festival, and it is September 24th through 28th. So you have traveled to California at least a couple times, and you look at films that have been produced either in California or nationwide and have been displayed there. There are also films, though, that are produced locally for your film festival, aren't there? I mean, and the theme this year is Out of This World, and there are several, I guess, being produced on that theme.
Yeah. What we have done in the past is part of that class that we took, they made their own documentaries, and those would be the locally produced, student-produced documentaries. But this past year, the executive directors, Pam Foreman and Ellen Mahaffey, were on sabbatical. So there was no summer course this past year.
Because they did a film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this year, the local film will be theirs, and that one is called Queer Insights.
Okay.
And that one will feature students from last summer's course, which actually a group that I was in. So that film will feature the group that I was in and kind of our transformational experience from the class being in San Francisco.
Okay.
So that's Queer Insights. Queer Insights will be screened Friday, September 26th.
Let's look on the calendar. Let's look back.
September?
Sure, that's a Friday. Yep,
so Friday, 26th. September 26th at 3 p.m. So that'll be a fun one to watch because that's a local one. And then you mentioned Out of This World.
Yes.
That is our shorts program, and that's full of very unique, different kind of films featuring characters that are out of this world. None of them are a part of, like, what we would see as normal citizens. So that one is fun. It'll feature about 8 shorts, I believe. Oh, that'll be Saturday at 2 p.m.
Now, the O Queer Film Festival isn't just about watching a screen and soaking up documentaries, because there's talking and discussion that goes on as well, right? That's a pretty important part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably the most exciting part for us. After each film, there's going to be a Q&A, question and answer period, and that gives the audience an opportunity to kind of dissect what they saw and talk it over. And it's a platform for people to have conversations about things that, well, to help open their eyes, help understand what they just saw and give us what they felt about it, too.
Producers, directors, people who put the films together of all of the entrants, are they going to be here? Are they the recipients of the questions and they dole out the answers?
That would be so great. Maybe in a couple years we'll make that happen. But we are able to bring a filmmaker. For our opening night film, it's called Out in the Night. It's a documentary.
Okay.
The filmmaker will be in attendance, Blair Dorsch Walter. Blair's also going to be able to bring one of the people featured in their documentary called Renata Hill. So we're very, very excited to be able to bring those two. And they will be available for the Q&A afterwards. And they'll be on campus for a couple days following, talking to classes. And so the students will be able to have a conversation with this person, too. So we're really excited about that. And, of course, for the film Queer Insights, which is the one that Pam and Ellen have made, they're the filmmakers, and they'll be there for the question and answer period, too.
And there's a little bit of athletics in it, too. The Chippewa Valley Roller Girls are going to be there, I see, because there's a film called Derby Crazy Love.
Yeah, the Chippewa Valley Roller Girls. I'm so excited about this.
I've always wanted to go to one of those, and I haven't. Maybe this is what I should go to be introduced to them to begin with.
This film, Derby Crazy Love, will get you super excited about the Roller Girls. Oh, yeah. It's like a highly entertaining film about the competition. It's these two rival teams, and we kind of see how one lost this year, and they're always tied. And, you know, one or the other always wins. You never know. So it's a great rivalry. But it also goes into what roller derby is. It's one of the fastest growing sports in the world, and it's a female sport.
Yes.
It's dominated by women, and that's really amazing for women in sports. And to have the Chippewa Valley Roller Girls, they'll be there for any kind of question and answer period as well. So if anyone has been questioning, like you, Al, going to a Roller Girls event here in Eau Claire, this will help probably get you there.
Because I want to do the – I want to yell and –
That's what you should do.
Yeah,
get into it.
Give them the elbow. I was going to ask you about obstacles and uphill battles, but this is a better way of putting it. What are the hopeful results of events like this?
Our main goal is to help create community. There's this, you know, in our community, there has been like this huge divide between the LGBTQ community and the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also not a big LGBT community in our area. It seems to be, if there is, you find it in a bar, you know? And this is an opportunity for not just the LGBTQ community to come out, but for allies and straight people to get to know. And it's not just for students either. This is for everyone. Anyone who, where the station reaches anywhere, where as far as anyone can hear Oh Queer through newspapers, radio, social media, it's for everyone to come and take part in.
Have you ever had a comment from someone, though, and this is kind of down and dirty, but have you ever had a comment from someone that maybe the title of the film festival can put people off?
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, wouldn't it be safer to call it, like, Puppies and Daisies Festival?
Of course.
You know?
I don't know if anyone would come to Puppies and Daisies
Festival.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, once you put the word queer in there, people think there are some people out there who will say, well, look what they're doing. They're putting that word that has been kind of derogatory over the years. I understand it fits Eau Claire, Eau Queer, but.
Yeah, the word queer definitely comes with a lot of baggage and a lot of strong stigma, and it does scare people a little bit. And I will honestly say that same for me.
Yeah.
I didn't feel comfortable with it. But once I took this course and I learned more about queer,
mm-hmm.
you learn that the word queer, yes, has had a negative connotation. But as time has gone on, the people in the LGBTQ community are trying to reclaim that word. So us calling it.
So it can bring people together on one side, but on the other side, it might put people off, don't you think?
It can put people off.
Now, LGBTQ, that Q is questioning, isn't it?
There's Q, and then you can add another Q for questioning, and then there's A for ally. So some people use Q for queer, too. It just depends on who you talk to, yeah. But we're hoping that by calling it Eau Queer Film Festival, yes, it may raise eyebrows, but we also hope that it is a part of that reclamation of the word and that it will help other people to open their eyes to it, too, and that it is okay to say, so long as you're saying it in a positive way.
Yeah.
But you're right.
It just appears to me that it wouldn't be the kind of thing that would bring certain people out of the woodwork, we could say out of the closet. People who are straight but want to come might say, they called it that, so I don't think I'll go. I hope I'm not offending anybody by talking about that.
But. No, I think that's a legitimate conversation to have. It has put people off, and I hope that those who are listening to this right now know that it's okay. It's okay to accept the word and to say it.
Okay, good.
And you know, so it's good that you bring it up. And I'm here to say that Eau Queer it's meant to be a positive thing.
Yeah, and I do see the fact that you're reclaiming it because there are some guys out there who would love to keep saying it in a derogatory way, but if you own it, they can't have it.
Exactly.
Good
for
you. Jerrica, thanks for being with us, and I'll give the audience the particulars. Way to go. Good directorship, and good luck in all you do.
Well, thank you very much, Al. I'm happy that I got to talk to you.
No, I'm happier.
Are you?
Yes. Jerrica Christensen, astute gal, director of this year's 5th Eau Queer Film Festival, coming to the campus of UW Eau Claire Saturday, September 24th through 28th in the Woodland Theater, Davies Center. All films and discussion are free, open to the public, and to see the schedule and learn more about the featured films, you're invited to visit online at oqueer.com. You can read the blog at eqff.tumblr.com. You can check them out on Facebook and Twitter, or you can go to the director herself via email at eqff, F as in Frank, at uwec.edu. Spectrum Memo, Sweet Surrender is playing through Saturday at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake. The Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee has scheduled auditions Tuesday from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. for 10 November, a docudrama based on the 1975 sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald in Lake Superior. The Menominee Singers are holding auditions this evening, Thursday, and then again next Wednesday and Thursday, September 3rd and 4th, 6 p.m. at UW Stout in the Choir Room in the Applied Arts Building. More information available via email at anoldsweetsong@hotmail.com and by phone at 715-505-3525. This is Spectrum West. So nice to have you along. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild is almost halfway through its third decade of serving the artistic appetites of performers and audiences in West Wisconsin. The new season is one area on which Jim Oliver focuses this week.
The 34th season of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild begins at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire on September 11th with the musical La Cage aux Folles. The schedule calls for three musicals at the State Theater, a drama, a comedy, a mystery, and a musical at the Guild's home base at the Grand Theater, along with a special Christmas play at the Grand. Joining us to fill in more of the details of the upcoming season is Ann Sessions, Executive Director of the Theater Guild. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Good morning.
Let's start out just by talking about La Cage aux Folles.
Opening soon. You know, it's amazing. It's going to be Labor Day in about 12 seconds here. But La Cage is this fantastic musical. And really the best way to describe it, a lot of you have seen the movie The Birdcage, and that was Nathan Lane and the late Robin Williams. And this is the musical that inspired that movie. And so that's the easiest way to describe it. So you've got music and dancing girls, you've got drama, you have comedy. It is a fantastic show.
So who is directing it?
Keith Loresh is directing and starring David Sweers and Randy Feit.
Ah, so that opens on the 11th. Runs two weekends, I believe.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, let's have a rundown on the rest of the shows for the season.
Opening really soon, in time for that October kind of Halloween time, we've got Young Frankenstein.
I was going to ask you about that, by the way. It seems to me in the movie they sometimes refer to as Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah. Now, if you go watch the musical version, you'll hear the Frankenstein.
Oh, okay.
Igor? Is it Igor? So if you love the movie, you will totally love that musical because it's really a faithful rendition. And so you'll be completely satisfied. Plus, you get all these fantastic musical numbers.
When somebody says, Frau Blücher, the horses will rear and whinny. And
yes, oh. Absolutely. You know, there are a lot of people that wanted to be Frau Blücher, so they've got a fantastic cast. But, you know, those are really iconic and fun characters in that show.
I worked in a newspaper once upon a time, and every time somebody would say Frau Blücher, somebody would whinny around the newsroom somewhere. That's one of those things you sort of remember forever.
Oh, yeah. You know, in the fall, we have this wonderful play, A Few Good Men. That one was also made into a movie. And so you remember Jack Nicholson saying, you can't handle the truth. That's the play.
That's the play.
It okay. is a page-turner. So it's a suspenseful, really interesting play. And that's also at the Grand. I think that's a great one, whether you've seen the movie or not, full of intrigue. And who doesn't love a courtroom drama?
For sure. So then we have...
So we got a Christmas show, The Best Christmas Pageant. That's a family show. So that's kids, adults. But that's a funny one. And then Over the Tavern. I was lucky enough to see Over the Tavern at Red Barn a few years ago, and we just loved it. It's a comedy drama about a family living over a tavern. But it's just an interesting take on people trying to think about their lives and kids and their place in the world. So that's a really nice winter kind of show. And then we follow that up with Sherlock Holmes. You know, Sherlock is really popular these days. But this one is a fun one. It's a final adventure. And so it kind of gives you these kind of vignettes and kind of stories from all the popular things. So it has, of course, the Sherlock Holmes and the intrigue and Dr. Watson and Professor Moriarty. So it's a wonderful show, followed by a musical, Little Women. We're going to switch all the way to the Civil War for a popular show.
I guess I wasn't aware that they had made a musical out of Little Women. I saw the movie Little Women back in the 40s, I think.
Yeah.
I read the book, too, after it was over.
Yeah, and it's gorgeous music that they wrote for this. And so it was on Broadway, very well received. It's a great presentation. You know, they've made the movie probably four times, but this is just a really wonderful stage musical, and this will be at the Grand, too. And then we're going to follow it up with Jesus Christ Superstar in April. What's to say about that? You know, that's as iconic as you can possibly get for a show. And then we'll do Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in the summertime in June of next year. And that's also a big popular musical. Mm-hmm. That's a big season, but that's got something for everybody.
Yeah, I should say. Yeah. How are the shows selected? What's the process for picking a season?
We have a committee, and they'll literally start in a few weeks for next season already. So as we're just introducing the season to the public, they're already starting their hard work, and they read plays and musicals. And, you know, it's a tough thing trying to fit a season together to make sure that you've got enough parts for men and women and kids and balanced at musicals and straight plays. And they do a wonderful job.
She is Ann Sessions, who is executive director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. How does one get involved in theater? Somebody's listening today and said, gee, that sounds like a lot of fun, but maybe I don't want to act necessarily.
I would say that each show we have, we've always got people that have never acted before. So if it's on somebody's bucket list, no matter what age, it's pretty easy. All you have to do is call us or go on our website. We've got two great volunteer coordinators that will give people the opportunity to get involved. But we've also got so many other ways you can. You don't have to sing and dance necessarily on stage in front of people. You can work behind the scenes, which is just as important, on sets or costumes or sound or box office. There's literally 100 different ways that you can become involved, and you don't have to have previous theater experience to get involved.
In a previous life, I was pretty heavily involved in a community theater in another city, and they would recruit guys to help build sets. Carpenters, you know, literally carpenters would come and help build sets. And pretty soon they were in the crowd scene in some musical or other, and then pretty soon they had a small part here and there everywhere. And I remember one of the guys wound up directing a show 5 or 6 years after he first started by building sets. So it's pretty easy to get sucked into the community theater.
I think so. We have somebody that did the backstage kind of stuff and was working on the set, and now he's going to be tap dancing in Young Frankenstein. And imagine that, you know, your very first time, you know, tap dancing. But here it is. You don't know if you have a talent or skill unless you come and try it. And here, this is a nice community. So you have, you know, a lovely people that surround you. And so you get to know people. And it's a really safe place to kind of try something new.
Mm-hmm. The Grand Theater was acquired in 2005, just in time for the Guild's 25th anniversary. In the intervening years as executive director, you have presided over a number of problems and things that happen when you have your own building, which every community theater really wants to have if they can. So you first installed an elevator, which was very helpful to everybody. Now there's this whole issue of the roof. And you got some publicity last week about some of your neighbors pitching in to help with that process. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we're located down in that Grand Avenue business district here in Eau Claire, in that the west part of the downtown, I guess. And we're a small group, but very mighty and concerned about each other. And so there's a group of businesses there that have rallied behind the Theater Guild to put a new roof. And so they literally just finished the roof on Friday, because it was also sort of raining indoors, which is not really what you want, a kind of a water feature in theater. We continue to raise funds to pay for that roof. You know, it is nice to see people get together and as a community rally to help the theater out.
So it is going to be dry inside, is that what you're
telling?
It will
be dry for the entire season and for many years to come.
Well, that's great news. We have been visiting with Ann Sessions, who is executive director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild in Eau Claire. The Guild's 34th season opens September 11th with the musical Le Cage à Folle. For information on season tickets or anything else you want to find out about the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild, you can call 715-832-PLAY. Ann Sessions, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Jim.
Support for WPR comes from the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. The Kids Bop Kids bring their Dream Big, Sing Loud national tour to the State Theater for a concert at 6:30 Sunday, September 7th. Details and tickets are available at eauclairearts.com. Support also comes from Ken Vance Hyundai, featuring the 2014 Elantra with a 6-speed automatic transmission and a 1.8-liter 4-cylinder engine designed for 38 miles per gallon. More at kenvance.com.
Thank you, sir. Spectrum Memo, a community event called Just Local, which focuses on bringing people together to learn about the importance of being an engaged community member, supporting the local economy, will be hosted by UW River Falls Thursday, September 4th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., under the tent on the University Center Mall. It's free and open to the public. I'm Al Ross. Spectrum West is fun to do. And it's good to have you along. Each week I receive several notices from publishers about books coming out. Authors are keeping busy, believe me. Our usual criteria for talking about a book is that either the author is from, was educated in, or has ties to our big neighborhood, or the book is about somewhere in or someone who lived or lives in Wisconsin. Then, every now and again, a book comes out that we regard as so universally interesting or entertaining that we take it upon ourselves to bring you the story. Well, this is one of those every now and agains. The book is indeed universally interesting and entertaining, and here comes the story. It's called Will It Waffle? 53 Irresistible and Unexpected Recipes to Make in a Waffle Iron. As the owner of at least two waffle irons, I was naturally lured into the conversation. You may have already heard or read about it. The author Daniel Shumsky is making the promotional rounds. He first started to attract an audience on a website, which is waffleizer.com, and he was generous enough with his time to share his interesting story. Man, I understand you were on Good Morning America. Was that today?
It was yesterday. Yesterday was a crazy day, yeah.
I don't watch the show, but somebody said, who you got today? I said, well, the waffle guy. Oh, he was just on Good Morning America.
Yep.
Wow, so that's, you're taking a step down to come here, but good. That's okay,
well,
though.
You probably won't have crowds of people shouting at me, you know, so it'll be, maybe a little...
That's true. There's no distractions here. So are you still in New York?
Yeah, I stayed in New York for this day, yeah.
Well, because we're curious, we can backtrack through your writing and your editing career to your newspaper days, to Lisa Futterman and her encouragement. But, you know, we still end up at waffleizer.com. And I understand your specialty was writing about food, but with all that's out there beckoning our taste buds and culinary curiosity, how and why waffles? Or maybe a better question is, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, looking back, that certainly seems like the question, right? I think it all kind of stemmed from a sleepless night when I was, you know, I knew that I had this waffle iron and I knew that I liked waffles, but I, you know, as much as I like waffles, you could only eat so many waffles. And so I didn't like the idea that I had this piece of kitchen equipment that I only used, say, once a week or once a month. And I started thinking to myself, you know, you must be able to make other things in the waffle iron besides just waffles.
Yeah.
And so the question kind of jumped into my head, well, like, you know, what about a cheeseburger? Will it waffle? And I made a cheeseburger in the waffle iron, and it worked beautifully.
No kidding.
And so once you have a success under your belt, you just keep going, basically.
After getting the book, and I looked through it, and I said, well, wow, look at that. You can make that. And I hit my head with my palm of my hand, like in the V8 commercial. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, the waffle iron is actually an ancient precursor to the George Foreman grill, for gosh sakes. I mean,
that is exactly right. I love when people make that connection where you look through the book and you think to yourself, yeah, that should work. That will work really well, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
with the hash browns where you're making them in the waffle iron because with that two-sided heat, you get a nice crunchy exterior without having to stir or flip or anything.
Mm-hmm. So then I thought, did George Foreman see the possibilities from looking at a waffle iron and he just didn't take it far enough?
That's possible. That's a good question.
You know, so you should be happy the light didn't go on in George's head. You got the book. So then, you know, as I was getting that epiphany, I thought, well, sure, you can make salmon in it, as you do in the book. You can make a burger. But then you get to cookies, man. I mean, it appears almost limitless, which is the cool thing about the book.
Yeah, let me cookies. Let me talk about the cookies for just 1 second. The thing about the cookies is, you know, if you want freshly baked chocolate chip cookies, and there's nothing better than that,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes you have to turn on the oven. You've got to make a batch of dough for, let's say, 2 dozen cookies and heat up the whole house with the oven. But the thing about the waffle iron is you can make the cookies just, you know, let's say just two cookies on the waffle iron, and you plug it in, and they're done in 2 or 3 minutes. So it's quick, and you don't have to heat up the whole house.
There you go. That's like that five-minute chocolate cake in a coffee mug.
Yeah,
never made one of those?
Microwave. Yeah, it's just a different way of thinking about, you know, the same kinds of ingredients that we'd use. There's nothing about the chocolate chip cookies that makes them specially suited for the waffle iron. It's just that it works.
Yeah. I hope you like this story, because right now, this very minute in my car, is one of those waffle sticks irons.
Okay? Oh, yeah, right.
And I have a new friend, who owns a Mediterranean restaurant, and he makes wonderful falafel. And I, the moment I got that book, I ran over to his place, and I said, wait till you see this.
Oh, yeah, I love where this is going, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, we're going to, he wants to, you know, sit in the kitchen and experiment with his stuff with my waffle sticks iron.
Yeah, one of my favorite recipes in the book is the waffled falafel. And, yeah, you know, the falafel is something that's typically deep fried. And I don't have a problem eating fried food, but it's also not something that I want to make at home all the time, because it's, you know, it's a little bit time consuming and it heats up the house again. So this is a way to make falafel in the waffle iron. And the bonus is that you get to call it waffled falafel.
Yeah, and when this turns out to be a phenomenon in this market, we're going to give you credit, believe me.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm saying we. This has nothing to do with me. It's his store. We're talking on the phone with Daniel Shumsky. The book is Will It Waffle, 53 Irresistible and Unexpected Recipes to Make in a Waffle Iron, from Workman Publishing in New York. It's such a unique cookbook, but in the end it is a cookbook because you did a lot of the good stuff that cookbooks do. You have conversion tables in it. That's cool. You give us all the information we need to know. You got timelines and tips and equipment and more. And one of the neatest things about the book is that you really do, you know, when people come out with something innovative, many times they're protective of it. You're not protective of it. You want people to go out and experiment. So when, notice I didn't say if, when members of our audience come up with recipes of their own, things to waffle they never considered waffleable, which is a word I love, they can have fun naming them. That had to be some of the more fun parts of doing this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love that aspect of the book. I really hope that the book encourages people to have a little bit of fun in the kitchen. You know, I'm someone who takes food really seriously, and I took the recipes in this book really seriously, but I don't take myself very seriously, and there's a lot of fun to be had here. And, I mean, so there's not just the waffled falafel, but you can talk about something like s'morfuls, which are waffled s'mores, right? Or you can talk about muffles, which are waffled muffins. So there's a lot of room for having a little fun with the names.
Daniel, is there one recipe in the book that you're most proud of or fascinated in?
Well, it's a hard question to answer. I think one of the things that I keep coming back to are the waffled quesadillas, because when you look at the waffle iron, you realize, you know, this is not made for this at all, but it's kind of the perfect tool for making quesadillas, because what you want is a little bit of pressure to bring those layers together, and you want heat from both sides, and you want something that's going to melt the cheese, and, you know, it's going to be done in 2 or 3 minutes. So it's this great unexpected combination of kitchen equipment and cuisine.
Sure. You know, I saw the crispy sesame waffled kale recipe, and it immediately prompted the question, what's the weirdest thing or combination that you tossed onto a waffle iron? Maybe looking back, you might have known better, but you had that Da Vinci spirit that made you try it anyway?
Right. I think, you know, surprisingly, the thing I learned in this is that the list of things that will waffle is way longer than the things that won't waffle. So fortunately, there weren't too many missteps. Now, there are limits. I mean, you know, I found that you can't go making soup in the waffle iron, let's say. You can't have anything that's too liquidy.
Sure. Now, since people will undoubtedly have fun coming up with more, as we just alluded, is there a continuation edition somewhere in the offing?
Well, what I would tell people is that I love hearing and seeing people's experiments in the waffle iron, and they can go to willitwaffle.com and, you know, check out on Twitter or Facebook. Mm-hmm. And also, they can find out at willitwaffle.com how to get the book.
You live in Montreal. How do French Canadians like the ideas?
That's a great question. I think they are, you know, they've got a pretty vibrant culinary scene up there, and there are waffles there. I don't know if it's caught on just yet. Maybe I need to do a French version of the book. I don't know.
Well, you must be becoming some sort of a celebrity. I mean, man, it's out there. I very rarely get excited about cookbooks. This one I'm excited about. I literally am going to go page to page and try everything. By the way, as a tribute to Lisa, I'm going on this Thanksgiving to make Stuffles.
Oh, those are definitely a go-to recipe. Yeah, once you know about those, there's no reason not to make them. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the waffled stuffing. Yeah.
Is this kind of a whirlwind for you, Daniel? I mean, what's next for you? I mean, you're getting a lot of ink with this.
Yeah, you know, it's really exciting. It's just great to see this idea out there and to see people having fun with it, because I've been having fun with it for a few years now. But it's really rewarding to see other people having fun with it, too.
You got to be walking around the kitchen, opening the cupboard, saying, all right, what can I, what revelation can I make about this thing?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the thing is, the idea for this book kind of came to me when I was half asleep, so maybe I do my best thinking when I'm not even awake. I don't know.
Wonderful. Daniel Shumsky, thanks for being with us. Keep up the good work. It's a lot of fun.
Thanks a lot. It was good to talk to you.
WillItWaffle.com. More information, how to get the book, and I believe how to add some fresh air to what you make for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and even more ingeniously, how you make it. Good times. Fun. And isn't that what life is all about? I am imagining people all over Western Wisconsin running around the kitchen. We have a waffle iron. Where is the waffle iron? I got to find the waffle iron. Spectrum Memo, Thursday night. That's tonight if you're listening on Thursday. The final Sounds Like Summer concert series at Phoenix Park in Eau Claire. That should be fun. Also tonight, Thursday night, if you're listening on Thursday, the 28th of August at Memorial Park in Ladysmith, the final night of the Music in the Park series presents the Ladysmith City Limits Show. Wow, that should be fun too. Thanks, Dean, and thanks, Tiffany, and welcome new interns eventually, everyone who helps put this show on the road. Next week, Emily from Indigo Girls will be here, and we'll hear some tunage from them. We'll define the directive, eat my fish, and more. Always more on Spectrum West, as you hopefully are coming to realize. I'm Al Ross again this week. Been a good time. Thanks, and we'll see you in September. That's a song, isn't it? Da, 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 da. Yeah, that is.